by my co-host, a man qualified for the next pro tour, chasing gold, Michael Hinderaker.
I mean, a man technically qualified for this pro tour because he put up a bunch of medium GP results a year ago. But something like that.
Technically is the best kind of qualified.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than it's better than not.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all that matters.
You know what else is better is our sponsor at Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood at checkout. That's like a pretty big chunk of change for your first order. We've had people buy modern decks, legacy decks, EDH decks, huge amounts of really expensive singles. So check them out, mtgoasis.com. Amazing place to buy Magic the Gathering cards. So it's pretty good. Dude4552 says, the LTO was so in-depth. I love it. So people have been saying, Michael, people literally been messaging me all week and talking to me about this week's limited time only. They're like, it's better. That episode was better than limited resources. I'm like, wow. Wow. We just got to skip 2 weeks more often so we have so much to talk about.
I mean, you got to be careful how you even respond to that. I don't even want to respond to stuff like that because it feels like anything you say is going to be construed in the wrong way.
I know, right?
I really don't want to get, something stupid you say offhand posted in a shots fired kind of message because it's not like that.
Absolutely. Especially consider Marshall's literally one of my heroes. I can't even, but I really appreciate the kind words that people have been saying about that show. So if you haven't checked out our sister podcast, Limited Time Only, a podcast about getting better at Magic the Gathering with a focus on limited play, you should definitely check it out. It's a good one and one that I really have been enjoying doing with Silver Pro Danny Cathrow.
That's Daniel Cathrow.
Is it officially Daniel Cathrow?
I mean, unless his parents actually named him Danny, which would be great.
I believe it is Daniel Cathrow. You can support this podcast, and Limited Time Only by going to patreon.com/ccmtg, becoming a patron of this show and all of our other content. There's also, if you want to just support the parent company, you can go to patreon.com/heezygamemedia, which is the soon-to-be owner of all of this content. Yeah, so for those who don't know, for a long time, I've been supposed to have created an LLC for this, and I'm finally doing it, and yeah, so hashtag always improving. But let's go on to our first segment, which is hashtag always improving. There's no Patreon question this week. If you are a patron of this show at patreon.com/ccmtg, you can ask any questions you'd like. There's no new patrons, so no shout-outs this week. But hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we want to be doing what we can all the time to try and improve ourselves. Because Magic's really tough. Michael, what is your hashtag always improving moment this week?
All right, so I spent some of my weekend watching people who are way, way more talented than myself play Magic. And just, I don't know, it was really sweet. I think sometimes you can feel like you're banging your head against the wall a little bit, and watching someone else play the same matchups you have but way better can be both really motivating and kind of flip a switch on for you just in regards to different things you can be doing. And watching Huey play Teemer this weekend was kind of shocking. It was just ridiculous.
I tweeted out that I literally think that Huey played the best tournament of Magic that's ever been played. I mean,
it's got to be close, right? I mean, I'm to be fair, I am assuming you're the same way. This is not like a look at how bad the other ones were. It was just no, this was really, really good.
It's really good. And the level of competition that he's playing with, you have to take that into consideration. He's outplaying the best players in the world consistently, turn in and turn out, and playing now, perfect Magic.
They just had really good plans. Their deck just made sense. Yeah, I think he and Reed and Owen all played basically the same list, and it was just cohesive, right? There were no cards in it where you're oh, I wonder what that's for.
Yeah.
Right, as they were playing, you just played really good Magic.
How do you learn from those moments? Like, what are you looking for? What are you trying to gain?
I think just trying. So a lot of the time, like with sequencing, you'll pick things up like, what two drops or three drops is he trying to play first? Does this change situationally? So I think like sequencing is a big thing you can pick up from players who are better than you, because it's the kind of thing that isn't always going to be part of the game. There are going to be times where you only have one two drop and the decisions are pretty cut and dry. But I think that like just maximizing small edges like that, seeing hands that he keeps that you might have mulliganed or right, just like all the little things. And I think that's the coolest thing about Magic, that all these decisions on their own, like it's very rare that one alone will cost you a game, but they just add up over and over and over again. And when you make every single decision perfectly, you know, find yourself 12-0 at a world championship.
Unreal. Just unreal.
Yeah. Just really cool.
Yeah. So for me, I got to watch a ton of Worlds this weekend as well. But the real thing that has changed for me kind of over the last month is my mental health and Magic. So for those who don't know, like I'm diagnosed with a bipolar disorder. It's sometimes been a real challenge for me. Back in the day, I was on a different medication that kind of made me way more quiet and laid back. But it was really tough on my body. And it's something that my doctor and I agreed to remove. But as I've had a kid and things have changed in my life, I've had a lot more depression and anxiety, and I was put on new medication, and it's kind of crazy how much this new medication has made me better at this game. I'm seeing things more clearly. I am not having emotional swings during matches. You know, it allows me to keep an even head and really focus on what matters in a given match. And it's something that I've been kind of been missing for the last, I don't know, a couple years, as my body's just missing chemicals that other bodies have. It's like hyper-focused. It's kind of amazing. It makes me think like what, you know, your mental health means in a match of Magic the Gathering and what it means just in your life in general. You know, while I've enjoyed Magic and I qualified for the Pro Tour without, you know, this stuff, it certainly has helped me, because I'm not, basically, it was really funny because I was talking to somebody about this and they're like, well, yeah, you're not holding yourself to a disadvantage anymore. Like you were just giving people free advantages on you by having a chemical imbalance in your body. And now like your body has the correct chemicals in it. And obviously you're going to play better from it. And I never really thought about that. Right. Cause you know, I just thought about what I can do for what's in front of me. Maybe not like, what am I doing to hinder myself outside of the game?
I think that's a good thought, and I think it just, like, if you generalize that statement, it applies even more broadly than just mental health. But I think, like, the idea, what am I doing outside the game that's helping or hindering myself is a really interesting one.
But it's so easy, and this is, I have family members who suffer from the same disorder that I do, and, you know, they want to cut all of their medication cold turkey, or they want to do these crazy things. And I'm like, you don't realize what things are doing for you and how much they're helping you, because you're so used to it after X number of years. Right. And then reintroducing myself to these chemicals are like, oh, okay. This is like what it feels to be a normal human being. And, I would encourage everybody to make sure that you're like in the correct place mentally, with your health and with your body, and you know, do the things that's going to be best for you, because one, life is hard, and two, Magic is also hard. So Michael, I know that you yourself have some mental struggles that Magic has actually helped you with.
Yeah, I think it does sometimes, but I would also say that sort of similarly to you, I definitely play worse Magic when my mental health is suffering. And yeah. I would imagine that that's true of just about everyone to some degree or another. I mean, even if mental health is not something you struggle with on a daily basis, I would think, you know, just like it's hard to, if you're really stressed out about something, really worried about something, really nervous about something, you know, if you're just struggling on a given day, it's difficult to focus on the things you'd like to be able to focus on.
Yeah.
So I think that magic is nice in that it requires all of your focus. And sometimes for me, where I feel like I just have a little too much going on in my head sometimes,
yeah,
it can be helpful to sort of try to quiet those thoughts by directing my focus really towards just one thing. But I'm happy that you think this will help you going forward and that it has made you feel better. That's really awesome.
Well, let's go into our next segment, which is our deck doctor. So every week on the show, we invite patrons of $5 or more who are one of our constructed critics to submit a deck for us to talk about on the show. We had 3 decks submitted this week, so we'll be going over them over the next little while. Michael, why don't you go ahead and read this deck list for us?
So this first deck list is 4 Aether Hub, 4 Botanical Sanctum, 3 Forest, 1 Island, 1 Mountain, 1 Rootbound Crag, 2 Sheltered Thicket, 3 Spire Bluff Canal, 3 Bristling Hydra, 4 Voltaic Brawler, 4 Long Tusk Cub, 2 Ronus, 4 Rogue Refiner, 3 Whirler Virtuoso, 3 Greenbelt Rampager, 3 Heart of Kirin, 1 Lightning Strike, 4 Attune, 4 Harness Lightning, 2 Blossoming Defense, and 4 Charter Course.
Should we start with Charter Course? What do we start with here? I guess go to the sideboard. Let's read the
sideboard. Sure. So the sideboard, playing 2 Chandras, 2 4-mana Chandras at Nissa, 2 Negate, 2 Spell Pierce, 2 Confiscation Coup, 2 Magma Spray, a Chandra's Defeat and a Braid, and 2 Deathgorge Scavenger.
Yeah, so the person posted this says, the original idea was to get a Jace hard deck. Jace seemed pretty meh. Being more aggressive seems better against you white. Mirror so far has been equal in testing. It doesn't feel like you lose a lot. Greenbelt Rampager has been one of my best cards, and Charter Course has been the best card. So let's start there with Charter Course and Greenbelt Rampager. Like, this is something that Jerry Thompson had talked about on his podcast, is going way more aggressive inside of these teamer decks. What do you think about this?
It's interesting. So I really like Charter Course. I've been trying it. Matt and I have been playing like a legacy deck with 4 main deck Charter Courses, and it's like,
dude,
pretty
I
good.
Knew that was gonna happen. I knew it.
Yeah, it's like pretty good. But it's interesting in a shell like this. So I like that you get away from Servant of the Conduit, because I feel like that is probably the most mediocre card in Teamer Energy. Like, you need it, and it enables some powerful plays, but, like, ultimately it's a grizzly bear.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, as an idea, it's kind of cool. I kind of wish we had more cheap spells. I worry about playing so many 3s and 4s with Charter Course. Maybe I'm wrong and that works fine. It's really, this deck is really cool though. I've tried like Heart of Kirin in this style of deck before, and it's always like close to being good.
Yeah, I want to kind of start with what I love in this deck, and Charter Course is obviously, you know, the biggest thing, right? Like, 2-mana draw 2 is like a dream that we all want to live in our lives, and like that's just the thing that every Magic player wants to do. I think that the other thing that I really love is like being aggressive, you know, being able to play things like Heart of Kirin and being able to pressure your opponent's life total pretty easily and their planeswalkers. You know, Voltaic Brawler and Lumpkus Cover basically always going to crew that. One of the problems that I always have with these style of decks is the Ronus Heart of Kirin interaction. It's so hard to turn on Ronus in this deck because either you have to crew your heart early and then it can get killed and your Ronus is turned off, or you have to make a big Long Tusk Cub and your Voltaic Brawler doesn't in itself turn on Ronus during the attack step. And you continue to have this problem because Greenbelt Rampager doesn't do it. So my first thought on this deck is that there might be too many Whirlers, and you might need more things. Like, you might actually need things like dragons in this deck.
You could do that, or you could try cutting Ronus.
That could work too.
Right, because that sort of gets back to something I was interested in, which is just, like, playing less threes. Like, I think one of the big advantages of playing, like, a 4-power 2-mana spell, like Heart of Kirin and Charter Course, is that we're starting to get into, like, I want to beat opponents by going spell.
Yeah, like, just by double spelling on four.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want a double spell. So if I go like one drop into two drop into three drop into spell spell into spell spell, like that's maybe incentive enough to not play Glorybringer. So, and I'm not sure that Glorybringer is really that good right now. Like, it's always fine. I mean, it's like just a pretty good magic card, but I don't think there are a ton of planeswalkers you're wanting to kill, and I don't really think it's that good in the mirror. That certainly has been my impression. Or against blue black.
So with the number of like Harness Lightning, Lightning Strike, you know, Heart of Kirin, would you consider maybe playing things like Chandra in this deck in the main?
Maybe. You could like cut the Ronuses. The problem is like without Servant, I think Chandra's just a little bit lackluster.
Too slow, okay.
I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think Chartacore sort of fills that same role, right? It just sure. like it gives you some form of card advantage that's hard to keep from generating a 2-for-1.
Okay.
I like getting to play Blossoming Defense in this style of deck. My experience has been that Blossoming Defense, when people aren't like really expecting it and playing around it archetypically, is really, really powerful. So like when you're playing like Green Black Energy or whatever and they like kind of know that you have them, it's slightly less good. But when you actually are playing a Blossoming Defense and your opponent just has no real reason to believe you'd have it in your deck, it's really, really good.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I am known for playing probably too many Blossoming Defense in my green decks.
But it's such a blowout.
It's like such a fun of you. They're like, you're like Blossoming Defense, and then they like just stare at their hand and they're like, oh.
Yeah, that seems bad for me.
I'm like so far behind now. Yeah. So yeah, I completely agree. Being able to play a couple Blossoming Defense and really blow out your opponent is huge value. What do you think this deck stands like? Where do you think it sits in the metagame? What do you think?
So it's a little bit hard to say. So one of the things I do like about this deck is you have a lot of stuff that's like hard to make a zero value attacker. Like Long Tusk Cub is almost always going to be okay to attack with. Heart of Kirin usually okay to attack with. Thopter Token is usually okay to attack with. So, like, I think you're going to be able to turn on your Chartacores pretty easily. Obviously, it's hard for me to, like, just say, oh, this is going to be good in the mirror or bad in the mirror or whatever. But I would imagine this list is good against Mono Red, like, probably even better than normal, just because you're, like, low to the ground. You have Blossoming Defense, which is great. You have Green Belt Rampage, which is very good. And you have Heart of Kirin. All three of those cards are very, very good against Mono Red. So imagine your Mono Red matchup is pretty good. It's hard for me to say how some of these changes would affect your other matchups. Do you have any opinions on that, Spencer?
I think that you're probably quite good against Mono Red and probably quite good against control decks. You have everything you need post sideboard against control decks, everything you need against Mono Red. And if in your testing you find that you're good in the mirror, the Heart of Kirin is helpful for you in that matchup, right? And being more aggressive is helpful. Then you've broken it, right? Like that's the thing that you need in this format right now.
Yeah, I mean this deck is certainly cool. I want it to be good.
Let's move on to our power rankings to talk about the kind of decks that you might have to prepare for. So coming in at number 5. So this week we're doing standard specifically with the MTGO rankings from last night. So last night coming in at number 5 we had Abzan Tokens. Abzan Tokens is basically the black white tokens deck from last season. But they have added a spicy new tech of Vraska.
Yeah, so Vraska is kind of cool in this deck. I mean, a lot of them were playing like Obnixilis before, and this is sort of filling that same role. Like, it's just a big removal spell, but this one can also make tokens, so it sort of is like Obnixilis and Gideon had a really ugly baby.
Yeah. Let's get the cat out of the bag. Like, there's just no way that Sacred Cat... Did you boo me?
I did. But it was great. I enjoyed it. I mean,
there's no way Sacred Cat is correct.
I don't know.
It's just not.
So, like, you need some density of these effects for, like, Legion's Landing to probably work correctly. But I don't know. Every time I play this style of deck, I'm just disappointed. It's, like... You just have to play so much sort of garbage, and you have so little actual velocity.
Yeah.
Like, there are things it's good against, certainly, but...
Yeah, it's good against Teemer.
I mean, it's good when Fumigate is good, basically. If right. Fumigate and is, yeah.
So this is exactly like... So the end of last season, right? Like, people started playing these black-white decks, and then people realized, oh, I can just play, like, blue-white approach instead and still play Fumigate, and my deck is, like, way better. So I actually don't understand the appeal of this deck. Like, we've already figured out the reason this deck is good is Fumigate, and that... I'm not saying that this deck isn't fun and it isn't interesting, right? Like Anointed Procession is a powerful magic card when you're going off. The problem is like the games where you cast Anointed Procession and then you like lose because like you have three Anointed Processions in your hand.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like in general this deck is it's okay. If it's something you like, I certainly think it's like playable. I'd imagine you have a, you know, pretty good mono-red matchup, a decent Teemer matchup.
Very good in those two matchups, I agree.
Almost certainly cannot beat the blue control decks.
Well, and that was why the deck fell off at the end of last season, is because people started playing Jeskai approach or blue-white approach. And now we have black control coming into this metagame along with blue-white approach. I think this deck, I mean, it already has fallen off just today. It comes in at number 6 and not number 5 anymore. I think we're just going to start seeing this deck fall more and more because it's not quite there. And maybe it gets another set, right? Like, they printed an Anointed Procession on purpose. Like, it's meant to be a good magic card.
Yeah, I mean, it requires such specific effects. Like, my biggest issue with this deck is just that you're locked into so many of these slots, these sort of mediocre cards. Like, they're... is a fundamental flaw in playing a deck with a bunch of Anointer Priests.
Yeah.
Right? If life gain isn't actually relevant, that card is just pretty awful. If you can't resolve Anointer Procession, Hidden Stockpile is pretty... Like you just have a lot of stuff that, like, it's good when you have the combo, but you have no way to dig for combo pieces. You don't mulligan very well because your curve is kind of out of control. And there's just a lot of error.
Yeah. Apparently, chat's saying that Raptor said that this is the worst matchup for blue-black control. I believe that could be true with the build that is being played right now, but I don't believe that it's an impossible thing for that deck to fix. Especially if you go into Grixis control, then it's just easy-peasy lemon-squeezy.
I mean, I get that if they resolve, like... So, it's probably bad the way they built blue-black control with, like, 4 Essence Scatters or whatever.
Right,
but
I don't necessarily
believe that, like, that's the correct way to build these decks moving forward.
Let's go into our number 4 deck. We have Sultai Energy coming in at number 4. This is the deck that won the SEG Open. Didn't show up at Worlds at all, but is continuing to put up results on Magic Online. Apparently I'm wrong. Apparently Approach is coming in at number 4. Let's go on to that one.
Sure.
Sorry, guys. So Approach coming in at number 4. I believe that it's 3 now, which is why I made the mistake. But this deck is interesting. It seems like people are having a hard time nailing down their removal package with this deck, which is so weird because there's not that much removal that you could be playing, Michael.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really like some variant of this deck. I'm not sure exactly the way I want to build it, but Search for Azcanta is, like, pretty disgusting. It's pretty good with Approach to the Second Sun because, like, it lets you, you know, Supreme Will from a land or whatever,
yeah,
which is just kind of gross. But it also, like, lets you hit your land drops or lets you find spells if you need them. I really like a lot of things about this deck. I like getting to play Cast Out. I really feel like Approach lets you play... I like that it lets you play a smaller package of things than, like, Scarab God, Torrential Gear Hulk. Like, you're only playing 2 or 3 Approaches versus, like, 6 Scarab God, Gear Hulk slots. I also think, obviously, one of the problems with blue-black, and I think we saw this during Worlds, is, like, just... basically lack of playable mass removal.
Yeah. Speaking of playable mass removal, how surprised have you been with Settle the Wreckage?
Well, I've only played against it much or with it much in Limited. It's like not... It's probably better in limited than constructed because you can actually, like, take the hit from a board a lot of the time and wait for the big thing they just played to attack. It's nice to have a 4-mana sweeper, and it's nice, like, these decks, it's a little bit tricky because you don't telegraph it quite the same because it looks like you're holding up Glimmer of Genius.
Yes, that's completely agree. It's basically, in my opinion, it's been impossible to play around, especially post-board, when they have Gearhulk, and after they've already cast it, it's like, okay.
It's tricky. It's certainly like, really tricky.
What is the correct play here? Because now I'm playing against around Gearhulk that can also wipe my board.
Right, and like if you decide to like stop attacking, I just think fundamentally, like that's the kind of thing you can maybe try. You can maybe try to play around it in limited, but like in constructed, it's really, really hard, especially if they're gonna like, you know, in the next turn the slam approach, and then they, you know, gain 10 life and kill you in a turn or two after that. Like, it just gets awkward to play around unless you have counter spells. So, I think it could end up being pretty powerful. I'm not sure whether I like this or the blue-black shell better, but...
I personally like this better. You know, two Settle the Wreckage, four Fumigate, putting you in the driver's seat against a lot of decks. What do you think of the Ipnu Rivulet and Gideon of Trials for the Mirror?
Okay, so I think Ipnu Rivulet, it's for the mirror, but it's also just so that if you're flooding, you can, like, search for Ezcanta yourself to just mill for and draw to it faster. It's not... nothing, right? I mean, that is one of the things you can do with Ipnu Rivulet, and certainly something I've done with Ipnu Rivulet before. I'm not actually sure that it's, like, better. It's probably just needed for the mirror. But sure. It does not strike me as good. You know, it's like the kind of thing you might have to do, but you're, like, not happy about it.
Oh, I think I mean, going down a land in the mirror is probably terrible.
Well... it's just kind of bad, right? It's like the kind of thing that you like maybe have to have if your opponents are playing it too, you kind of get priced into playing it. But it's like this, it's the kind of arms race that's bad for everyone, right? It's like nuclear escalation, right? No one wants it, but it just keeps happening. So Ipnu Rivulet it is.
Yeah, I have an anti shout out to Mason Clark for talking in my ear. The show notes definitely say that Sultai Energy was coming in at number 4.
All good.
So, let's talk about Bug Energy really quick.
Yeah, so Sultai is like... It's kind of like... a new take on the Constrictor decks, right? From like last season. So they're playing Ballista, Siphoner, Cub, Constrictor, and then like Rishkars still. But then they're playing Rogue Refiner, Hostage Takers, and Scarab Gods.
It's so funny because like you played against this deck at GP Denver and like came up to me and were like, dude, I think they broke that deck.
It seemed better than my deck in the mirror, but it also was probably way worse against Mono Red, so you know.
So what is your thoughts on this deck? Like, you have a lot of what you need. I'll let you go first.
Okay. This is going to sound, I mean, maybe a little hyperbolic, but I hate this deck. I don't think you have enough payoffs. You have this weird, awkward split where, like, you have all these things that generate energy, but there's only one thing that actually really sinks into. Like, Glintsteve Siphoner mostly is kind of self-sustaining. Like, it's very rare that you're going to draw, like, 4 cards with a Glintsteve Siphoner or whatever. Like, mostly, if you can draw the turn you play it, sick. Or the upkeep after you play it, rather. That's great. And then maybe, like, one more, and then it usually dies. So, having, like, a bunch of extra energy laying around is kind of not that good. So, this whole deck is interesting in that, like, we don't have any Gearhulks or anything like that. So, our Walking Ballistas are kind of anemic, except with Winding Constrictor, which is only really good with Longtusk Cub and Walking Ballista. So we have these, like, different packages in the deck, but I'm not really sure how... Like, we're not really a very good energy deck or a very good Winding Constrictor deck, and we've kind of mashed them together, and I don't know why we're doing this.
Yeah, so I did a deck tech on just green-black energy, and I included Hydras, in the deck, and I specifically talked about in the deck tech that that you just don't have any energy sinks. Like, you get so much energy. I think that you do want both Hydra and Gearhulk in this deck. And I don't know. I think you can just play Scarab God and not play Hostage Taker, to be honest.
Like sideboard it or something.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I like, in playing this deck, I've been very unimpressed. People playing the deck at Oasis have been unimpressed with it. And, I mean, even chat's talking about how unimpressive it's been. I think that this deck, right, like the Constrictor deck, is going to find its way in and out of the format. But this deck has such a hard time closing games.
Yeah, it's just kind of guys. Like, none of our... So, like, Rishkar is good with Whining Constrictor, and it's kind of good with Walking Ballista, but, like, Walking Ballista on one into Rishkar, like, is okay, but you're not really blowing the doors off people, right? Like, if your team or energy opponent is, like, attuned into Long Test Cup. Like, there are just a lot of things that, like, make that look kind of stupid. So, you have, like, you just... For a three-color deck that feels like it should be a good stuff deck, the power level of this deck is just, like, shockingly low.
I agree. Like, and it's funny, because it combines both the things that Michael and I wish that we could be doing, me playing Constrictor and Michael playing Glintsleeve Siphoner, and, like, it's just not quite there. And I do think that there could be a combination of this to come out of the Pro Tour, just because I think that you could easily find that you could be good against Temur with this deck and maybe figure out how to beat Mono Red with it. It's just really tough.
I mean, I think this deck is probably pretty good against Mono Red, actually. Like, Hostage Taker is good against Mono Red, Fatal Push, Blossoming Defense, Walking Ballista, Long Tusk Cub. Like,
I didn't find that true in my testing. I actually found Hostage Taker to be quite bad against that deck.
Interesting. I would think that stuff would be good, but maybe not. It's just, this deck is just, like, oddly mopey. You're just playing a bunch of mopey guys.
I feel like Rogue Refiner's like the odd man out. Like, it's just taking up a position in the deck that, like, it shouldn't be there.
You don't have enough sinks for it to make any sense. Like, you don't have Hydra. You just have Cub as something that, like, actually really wants energy. Like, I could just imagine so many games where I draw, like, four extra cards off a Glintsleeve Siphoner and Rogue Refiner combo, and, like, mostly just find, like, Blossoming Defenses and Fatal Pushes. Like, Are those actually beating anything your opponent is really playing that's, like, more than a 2-drop? Not really.
Let's go on to our number 2 deck. We have Temur Black coming in second place. This deck is great. I don't know what else to say. Michael, what has been your experience with this deck so far?
It's just good. I mean, I think whether you play black or just whether you play the mono four ofs version, I think maybe the black is slightly better in the mirror and the non-black is better in most of the other matchups, but you just play a lot of really good magic cards. Like, it's powerful, the mana's good, you get really good sideboard cards, like Spell Pierce and Negate are insane out of the board. Watching this deck at Worlds this weekend, it's just like, I think it has a surprising amount of play to it, in some of the games at least, and you just playing good magic cards. Like, ultimately, when you get in, like, a top decking situation, Servant of the Conduit is, like, the only, like, really medium creature in your deck. Pretty much everything else is, like, kind of great.
Yeah. One thing that chat's talking about is the PGO version of this deck and our thoughts on it. And we were kind of talking about it before the show. We both think, and I think even the pros think, that the black version is better in the mirror technically, but PGO was just super prepared, knew exactly what they wanted to do to try and beat the mirror match. Even though their deck was not technically favored, they had a very clear game plan, while their opponents maybe didn't have a clear game plan against what their game plan was.
I don't know. I feel like the essence scatters are pretty good in the mirror.
They are.
And the main deck Confiscation Coup is obviously pretty powerful there as well. Like, if your opponent plays a Scarab God, you have, like, a good answer in Essence Scatter and a ridiculously broken answer in Confiscation Kuyar Scarab God. Yeah, right? So happen in a game one, it's like...
Sure. So you think that that's where you would want to be?
I'm not really sure. You might be able to end up somewhere in between. I'm not really sold on, like, Glorybringer being... It's fine, but I'm not sold on it being insane right now. So, I mean, you might still end up somewhere more like PGO spells minus some Glorybringers plus some Scarab Gods.
Sure.
Something like that. There's also something to be said for, like, when you're playing card... When people have been testing this mirror match for a while, but they're not testing against your list... Like, all of a sudden, Essence Scatter changes the way you need to play the mid-game.
Right.
Where before, like, even though their lists are public and you know that they have Essence Scatters, you maybe haven't played enough games to actually see how that affects how you need to sequence things. Like, whether it means that you sometimes need to lead on, you know, like the combination of Essence Scatter and Confiscation Coup makes things awkward for your opponent and opens them to making a lot of mistakes that I feel like... maybe you can't make against a version with none of those cards.
Let's go on to our number one deck right now on MTGO, which is Ramunap Red. Coming in kind of just chugging along, man.
Well, I mean, to be fair, on Magic Online, like, deck is cheap. There are a bunch of different builds of it, so it actually can, like, take up multiple 5-0 slots despite being all mono red. So I think it gets pumped up a little bit online compared to paper. But yeah, I mean, this deck is still good. Like, Lightning... So you lost one drop, but then Soulscar Mage got a lot better because Lightning Strike is an instant where Incendiary Flow wasn't. So, yeah, I mean, still good.
Yeah. Chat's saying that they think this deck is bad right now. I haven't experienced that. I think that the deck can still steal a lot of games. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I feel like... saying this deck is bad is likely an overreaction. Although I admit this deck did not do well at Worlds, I think this is the kind of deck that improves. The more people start trying to level each other in teamer mirrors and control mirrors, the better this deck gets. The tighter the field, the worse this deck is because you can prepare for it sort of explicitly. But the more you start worrying about teamer mirrors, the more you start trying to figure out how to tech your control decks for those mirrors and for teamer, the more this deck just blindsides you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this deck is going to stay in the format, and it's going to be kind of that level that keeps you honest and keeps things in check, which is good for the format.
It is. This is the deck that, like, forces you to play main deck Magma Sprays, right? It forces you to not just, like, cut all your one-drop removal.
Yeah.
Right, because if you wanted to level the teamer mirror or whatever, right, you're trying to, like, go away from that and play a bunch of, like, Essence Scatters and Confiscation Coups and Commit to Memories or whatever, and this is the deck that's like, no, you don't get to do that.
Right, exactly. Well, we're going to skip our Deck of the Week segment this week due to time constraints and go straight to our training grounds, which is not getting lazy. Ha, get it? We're skipping. I thought that was funny. So every week on the show, we like to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. Although I skipped another segment that I didn't want to, and that's what we'd play and why. So Michael, of the decks in Standard right now, what would you play and why?
If I had to play an event for my life, I would play Teamer Energy. If I had to play an event with a deck I wanted to play, I would play Slim with Search for Azcanta.
Sure. So, like, a blue-white approach or blue-black approach deck?
Yeah, I saw a list online that was, like, blue-white approach with duresses in the sideboard that looked kind of cool. Mostly, you know, like, I want to duress my opponent's duress.
Right.
Just seems like a good time.
Yeah. What is the reason that you would play those two decks?
Well, I just think Search for Azcanta is really sweet, and I, you know, kind of love it. Like, I've been messing around with it in Legacy some, so... You know, it's just cool. But I think Teamer is just, like, really good, and it rewards your understanding of how matchups play out. It gives you a lot of sort of, so, like, I can't remember who said this on coverage, but it just, like, really sort of clicked for me when they said this, but it was like, energy is a resource where it can turn into all kinds of different things during a game. And you're basically trying to figure, you're constantly like trying to figure out, okay, is putting energy into this long tusk cub the best use? Or should, even if I don't have a whirler now, should I be trying to draw one? Or should I be making, you know, how many do I need to have loaded up for this harness lightning or this confiscation coup? Like, you just, you know, how much am I going to need to use my Aether Hub? Am I going to use my Servant next turn? Like, it gives you a lot of control over another resource, and using that resource perfectly versus okay versus badly, like, really levels up your ability to win with the deck. And yeah. I like how in, like, how much control and how many decisions that gives you in a game.
Yeah, I think that for me, I'm on Team Red Black right now. And the reason is very much what you just said. I think that giving myself the control over the games that I want to try and win through extra resources, and especially over my opponents who might be using those resources incorrectly. One of the reasons that I love Sealed so much is because there's things that happen before the first game is played that I feel like I have an advantage in. And if I understand resource management better than my opponent in a Teamer Mirror, I feel like I'm usually ahead in those matchups. And I like playing that style of Magic where I get rewarded for playing well, and I think that Teamer really does offer that at this point. So let's move on to that Training Grounds. We're going to talk about Nock being lazy. So I think that this happens to everybody quite a bit, is they like find a deck that they love, they find a format that they love, or they top 8 a PPTQ, or they win their FNM, and then they stop trying, right? Like, it's, all right, well, I'm already good enough. Dust my hands off. Now I can go do something else and not really worry about the thing that's up next. And I think that that can become a real problem for a lot of people in understanding, like, what it is that it takes to be the best Magic player that you can be. You know, hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast for a reason. When I say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, I don't think that there's, like, these levels in Magic where you stay the exact same the whole time, because it's just too hard of a game with too much going on. Michael, what is hashtag always improving mean to you?
I think that maybe a lot of it, to me, it has to do with, like, understanding that you're not always going to be making these sort of big quantum leaps, but just that finding, like, any... What I like about the idea of always improving is that you can pick any little thing that's been kind of nagging at you or you feel like is a weakness in your game, and just try to, like, improve it really marginally a little at a time, right? It, like, it makes getting better achievable. Because I think when you talk about, like, okay, I won my FNM, now I want a PPTQ. I won a PPTQ, now I want to play a PT. I played a PT, now I want to do well at a PT. Like, you know, how do you just, like, when you set these really big goals for yourself, it's so daunting and overwhelming that it's hard to even know where to start. And for me, always improving means, like, today I am going to try to figure out which 2-drop I'm supposed to play in this matchup.
Oh, that is the perfect example. I think that being able to say, today I want to understand X better, is the perfect analogy for hashtag always improving. Like, yeah. where do I understand X or Y in this matchup? And do I understand it better than I did yesterday?
Right. I'm going to try to figure out why Huey sideboarded like he did. I'm going to try to figure out what his plan is in this matchup. And then I'm going to, you know, play some games and see if I can figure that out too and understand why he thought this was a good... Like, I think if you set these really big, huge goals, it's just really hard to know where to start. And if you just set a goal that is mostly, like, work-based rather than results-based, you have so much control over how you feel about what you're doing. And I like that.
Yeah, I think it feels really good, right? Because it always feels good to accomplish something. And when your goal is, you know, about learning, or your goal is about putting in effort, the results will just come. Like, it's a natural conclusion to that. Maybe they won't come in the time frame that you wanted, which is kind of why results goal in a game like Magic is really tough, right? Because what's going to happen? Like, you're going to set the goal to win a PTQ, and sometimes things are going to get in the way. But yeah, if you,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that's exactly it. Just you don't have control over things that aren't related to your own effort.
Right. And, you know, hashtag always improving is kind of a take stolen from my previous work and then changed it a little bit. And the next thing that I want to talk about is another thing that I thought about last week for my work, that a lot of people resonated with and messaged me about, and that's day one. At my old work, we said that every day was day one at work. And the reason for this is that you treat each day like it's your first day at that job. You still have those big dreams where you want to get promoted, that you want to learn as much as you can, that you want to soak in the information, and that you want to be better tomorrow than you were today. And if you treat every day like that first day at work, where you're trying to gain that information and soak up all of that, you know, you're going to be better at your job. And I think magic is the same way. If you treat every day like the first time you picked up a magic cards and you have so much to learn, the truth is that you do still have so much to learn. There still is so much in front of you that you can gain. Michael talked about watching QB Jensen this weekend. This is why I love watching Limited Magic. People talk about how much they hate watching Limited Magic. But when I watch like Owen Dirtenwald play a match of draft, I'm like, I don't know that I'll ever be able to do what you're doing. I can't even see the things that you're seeing three turns ago. Like, and you'll see somebody like Huey or Owen make a play, and the better you get, the more you see these things, but you're like, oh my gosh, that's why he made that play I disagreed with four turns ago.
Right. He wanted to make this trade that I thought was bad because, you know, he could have used a combat trick, but he knew he would need a combat trick when his opponent drew the charging Monstrosaur that Owen had passed him and knew he, like, right. You just like, yeah, where you're like, that just doesn't seem like a thing you should be able to think of, but here we are.
And I find it amazing that we get this opportunity to play a game that lets us do this. So how do you apply this to Magic, Michael? Like, where do you start?
So what I like doing sometimes, I don't know, I'm someone who gets overwhelmed kind of easily. Like, going back to kind of, you know, like, how do you like to set goals? When I'm trying to do, like, prep for an event, especially, I like to think of, like, trying to break things into kind of one-day chunks. And the nice thing about that is if you have a day that goes badly, but you've kind of broken things up a little bit, it doesn't feel like you're falling behind in the same way, right? You're just kind of like, okay, well, that day was bad, but now we get to start over. And even if you're setting achievable goals, like, you're just going to have days where maybe things don't quite go your way. Just like, I mean, I'm sure we've all had jobs before where, like, it's not for lack of effort, but, you know, sometimes you just have a bad day or things are tough and they don't go like you'd hope them. You don't go like you'd hope they would. And I think just like being able to reset a little bit at the end of the day and kind of like, okay, so what did I like, just sort of recap. And then based on what I learned today, what do I need to try to do tomorrow? And like, if you can just break things down into that, it makes it more manageable. It makes it easier. It makes it easier to be positive about what you're trying to do, I think.
When you think about laziness in Magic, how do you think it happens? And what are the kind of things that you think people become lazy about?
I think, like, I notice this sometimes, but I think it's easy to get kind of complacent. Like, I certainly struggle with, like, trying to get better in an abstract sense, which is why I think I like preparing for an event. I have more fun with Magic when I'm preparing for an event than when I'm not. Largely just because it's so much easier to learn about a matchup or a format or about a draft format or about, you know, the combat tricks in a limited set or whatever. It's so much easier to, like, pick a concrete thing and learn about it than it is to try to get better in the abstract sense. And I know that for me, one of the ways that laziness happens is just like, even opposed to laziness, just kind of lack of focus, where I can still play Magic but just be sort of aimless. And maybe separating like laziness in terms of actually wanting to play versus laziness in terms of like playing actively with a goal, playing to learn.
Yeah, I think that you kind of touched on two major things that I think of. The first being complacency. So often, you know, the people will be like, well, my goal was to win, but I'm in top eight, so I think I'm happy now.
Well, and it's natural. I mean, there's nothing like, right? I think that's something that everyone feels like.
Oh, everybody. I don't know if it was in this week's video or one of my last videos on Wednesday Night Warrior where I talked about just this feeling that I had for so long that, like, all I wanted to do was top eight that PDQ. I told myself I wanted to win, but the truth is I just wanted to prove that I was good enough to top eight. And I think it was this week in understanding your goals. And I think that laziness happens when you become content with this, like, where you're at. But I think that the truth is that when that happens, you actually become worse at Magic. Because while you were shooting to win and you suddenly became happy with top eight, now all of a sudden you're shooting for top eight and it's so much easier to fall from there. And I hope that the listeners can find, like, what is your goal and what does it take to get there? And do the things that it takes to get there and make those the goals rather than the end result, because then you're not happy with whatever the result is. You're still trying to build on top of that. And then the second thing that you talked about on this is that absent-minded playing of Magic. And this happens so often where I'll talk to somebody about a match of Magic that they were playing that I was watching, and I'm like, what were you thinking here? And they're like, I don't remember. Like, I don't even remember that turn. And it's like, oh, well, why don't you remember that turn? It's like, I was just kind of like jamming, like doing whatever my cards told me to do and doing whatever was in front of me. And that is laziness, right? Like, that is you saying, this is one mana, this is two mana, this is three mana, this is four mana. Why did I lose? Like, it's so easy for that moment to happen to you and you not even to realize it.
Right. And I mean, if you only win the games of Magic where you curve out better than your opponent, you're going to win like exactly 50% of your games of Magic, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Except the thing is that when you play people who are better than you, you're going to, you know, always lose some percent, right? Yeah. It just.
So how do you catch that? How do you notice those times where you're being lazy and shouldn't be? And it's like, how do you find that you're doing it?
I mean, it's tough. Like, I think if this was an easy topic, you know, we wouldn't really have to talk about it, right? Like, part of the reason this is a problem, I think, for basically everyone is because it's challenging to even figure out when it's happening sometimes. Because, you know, you don't have an event every day. You don't get, like, absolute measuring sticks in Magic, right? Even on days you do have events, you can choose a deck and play pretty well, and overall, you know, not really have anything to complain about, and it just didn't go that well. And does that mean you're terrible now? No, it just means today wasn't your day. But I think that trying to think about, like, what you're working on improving and then measuring that improvement in some way, I mean, maybe not. Again, it's sometimes hard to measure that kind of improvement, but just working on. Like, I notice when I've been working really hard at a certain matchup or playing a lot with a certain deck, I'll just feel a sense of comfort. I don't feel apprehensive about playing a tournament with it. You know, I am playing a matchup, and what I want to do might not even be correct, but I know what I want to do, and I know why I want to do it. And just sort of feeling that sense of ease playing Magic where, like, I've already done a lot of the hard work in this. My match, I have to think because things are different than they were in, you know, every testing match or whatever. But I feel comfortable and, like,
yeah,
I'm not stressing myself to death in the match.
Yeah, I think front loading your work that way is really powerful. And Tuxdev in chat is kind of talking about that a little bit right now, which is that you autopilot can be okay, but you have to know the moments when you're supposed to turn it off, right? Just like if you were flying a plane, like, sometimes you gotta turn off autopilot for a minute, dude. And when I was watching Worlds this weekend and watching specifically Reed Duke play, and the way that he plays Magic was, I literally thought to myself, that is how I want to play Magic. That is going to give me an opportunity to front load my work, to take a little bit of a load off my shoulders, and then focus when it's time to focus and make sure that I understand why I'm making the plays that I'm making.
Right, and that's the secret, right? If you have to spend a ton of time, like, trying to figure out whether you are supposed to play Botanical Sanctum or, like, you know, Rootbound Crag on one, you're in for a bad time because you just can't be thinking that hard about every little decision, or you're going to burn yourself out over the course of, you know, a 15-round Grand Prix or whatever. But at the same time, if you are never conscious of corner cases, if you're never finding, you know, deviations from typical play patterns that blow out your opponents or give you the opportunity to do something that you, you know, maybe hadn't thought of before, you just have to find balance, right? You sort of have to have the heuristics built that allow you to autopilot through the easy decisions and then be able to actively figure out solutions to the more complex problems that present themselves.
What do you think the solution is to keep this from feeling like a job, though? Like, I think we're kind of touching on it, but, like, at what point do we stop ourselves from being like, this is tough, like, I can't do this all the time?
I think just don't play when you don't want to is, like, the big one for me. If you try to force yourself, like, if you're not in a space mentally where you're going to be able to learn and think productively and sort of enjoy yourself as you're doing it, I think that the vast majority of us are not at a level where it makes sense to, like, try to force improvement like you might in a, you know, in a salary position or whatever. I just think ultimately Magic is fun, and if it's not fun for you, you probably shouldn't be playing.
I think that focusing on different things, switching things up, playing limited, playing, you know, just don't force yourself to jam 300 games of Modern if you're not enjoying Modern that day.
Like, right, but at the same time, if you are, then cool, right?
Right, like, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that you have to treat it like a leisure activity you're serious about, right? I mean, how do people learn to play instruments really well, right? It's like, so I'm sure that not every little bit of learning to play an instrument is always really, really fun. Sometimes it feels like work, but there are things, you know, when you, like, make a play that's way better, or you recognize your opponent and are able to, like, put them on a card. I remember playing a game of, like, Shadows Limited, where I put my opponent on Rattle Chains and then played around it, even though it was a rare, and then he just had it, and I was like, oh yeah, well, I knew it, because there's no other reason you would play like that. And, like, it was really cool. I mean, it probably took me a lot of games to figure out that, like, you know, to have the confidence to play around a Rattle Chains, but when you actually make some really cool play, or, like, you just realize you made, like, really good mulligan decisions for a whole day, or you, like, basically always played the right 2-drop, and when it died, it was what you were expecting, and when it lived, it was what you, like, I don't know, when you make progress, it's really rewarding, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's the end goal, right? Like, we're not saying, like, you can't take time off, right? Or not do what you're gonna do. We're just saying, like, when you're going to play, like, do the right things, and the end result, you'll be happier. Because you'll feel accomplished, and, like, that's going to release way more endorphins and dopamine into your body than the frustration that you could have by playing games lazily. So let's talk about Patreon really quick. So don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. Everybody donating $1 or more per month, anything you see fit is really appreciated. It means the world to us every time we get those notifications. It really does help out. It makes it so we can do more content, go to more events, pay for the LLC, just things that we need to do, maintain the website. I had to pay for the hosting and the website and stuff, and it's not cheap when you have this much stuff hosted and, this quantity of content. So, everything is really appreciated. We're always going to keep the podcast free because our end goal is to just help people get better at Magic the Gathering and improve ourselves. But if you can donate, please check it out, patreon.com/ccmtg. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hinderrocker. You are totally welcome to send me a message or post in the Facebook, in the Constructive Criticism Family Facebook group, and tag me in it, and I will do my best to get back to you. I'm not always great at it, but I do try. And you are also welcome to tweet at me, or follow me or whatever. I don't know that following me is really that high value because I almost never tweet. But I'm just being honest here. My Twitter is @MagicMikeMTG.
You can tweet at me @Spencer13H. You can You can find me on Facebook, Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me in the Constructive Criticism family or the Constructive Critics group if you're a patron of $5 or more per month. You can join the conversation by going to the Constructive Criticism family. You can like us on Facebook at Constructive Criticism. You can listen to the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, constructivecriticism.com, and here on Twitch Live, as well as later on YouTube. So if you like watching us for some reason, hi. And thank you so much for listening. You can also join the Discord channel or the clan. Both of those, the clan, you have to message me when I'm logged on to Magic Online at Spencer13Dev, and you can join the Discord. That's just in the bios page on constructivecriticism.com to get that link. Hashtag that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. I was told that Michael refuses to say it, but it will quit if I don't say it.
You know, everyone has their ultimatums, and that's mine.
Their demands. The first one is, what do you know? This is me responding to Donald Smith. Hashtag would that be good? I was talking about how much I was enjoying playing the blue-green tempo Merfolk Brew, but I didn't know. I don't know how to beat Longtusk Cub. Gonna try One with the Wind and Aethersphere Harvester. And then Donald Smith said, well, you could try to be the one with the cub instead. What does he know?
I don't think he even said try to be the one with the cub. He said try to be one with the cub instead. I think it's much more of a Zen message than you're giving.
Okay. Way more Zen. Pineapple.
It's not every day you get a world's competitor replying to your tweets. So, I appreciate that.
We can finally say congratulations, by the way, for Donald going over to Wizards. It was super funny. He comes to Salt Lake and I'm like talking to him and I take him out to lunch and I was just like, we were talking about it and he's like, or coming on the show and stuff, and he's like, well, that's gonna be hard. I'm going to Wizards. And I was like, what? Because the dude just got platinum, and I'm like, what is up with all these platinum pros just like getting platinum and then just being like, peace out, going to WotC.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a pretty good setup. I know he's excited about it. I'm happy for him. He's a really good dude.
He's so nice, like just one of the nicest. So Scotty says, pizza pineapple instead of pineapple on pizza, hashtag would that be good? No, it wouldn't.
It just looks like...
it's just cheese and meat inside of a pineapple. It looks terrible. With pineapple chunks.
Yeah. Just the rule of thumb is that pineapple is weird with... well, it still looks like it has tomato sauce. And the rule of thumb is actually that pineapple and tomato are kind of weird. That's my opinion. That's why that whole thing is weird.
Yeah. Next, we have getting ready to start my LLC for at CCMTG and expand my content into more than just Magic at Heezy Game Media. Check it out. Hashtag would be good. Yeah, so new YouTube channel, new company. It's going to be the owner of LTO and Constructive Criticism, but I'll be talking about nerd culture, games, Star Wars, other TCGs, stuff like that. You can check it out. But yeah. Just wanted to expand the content into more stuff and also finally get this locked down. I didn't want to start a Constructive Criticism LLC because I wanted to, if I ever like Audible, I wanted it to be pretty easy to do that. So Brian says, thanks for the awesome list, Colin 81. Closed out my birthday with a strong 301 at Standard Tonight with Esper Puppet. What is that?
Oh, it's like... oh, man. It looked
It's the tokens deck. It's a tokens deck, and everyone can hear me because I turned myself on because it felt like a good time to hop in.
It's like the hidden stockpile stuff, but then you're playing Marionette Master.
Okay.
Sorry. It's. I mean, cool. I'm sure it's like kind of nonsense, but I bet it's really sweet.
Okay. Cool. All right.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah,
well, congratulations to Brian. Happy birthday.
Yeah, it feels good. It's nice to have a birthday. It feels good to do well on it.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. And I forgot to mention our other sponsor at Fusion Gaming and the Mana Source. Oh, my gosh. I did that last week, too. Or two weeks ago.
It's just...
It's so easy
yeah.
to make that mistake. It's the mana base where you can listen or watch Nikachu crush people like Mason Clark because they play bad decks like tokens. So we'll see you guys all next week, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks, guys.
Magic.